This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas, powered by U Mobile.
Today on the Breakfast Grill, we are talking to Dato' Sri Hadian Hashim, the Managing Director of the oil and gas services firm Icon Offshore. Now, Dato' Sri, welcome back to the grill. As we know, you are one of the largest and youngest suppliers of offshore support vessels in Malaysia and in the region, ASEAN. Let's start with a business update from you in terms of utilization rates for your 20 OSVs and your single jack-up rig.
Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. So far, for the if you then look at, let me split the business now. We have OSV, the utilization of that part of the business has gone up from, since I took over, from 70 plus percent to 91%. That's a very high achievement. For the rig so far, it has been all 100%.
Okay, so basically there is still one or two OSVs, offshore supply vessels, which are lying, I guess, in port, waiting to be deployed. But what can you tell us in terms of charter rates? I think the more important part is the trend line.
I think what I want to address is the active vessel, those are the figures that I've told you before. The one that's been let off, we would have sold them probably in the next 1 or 2 months. So by this time, probably next 2 to 3 months, we don't have any more let up. In terms of the utilization, the spread is between 4 OSV between Malaysia, that give us about 40% of the revenue. Brunei is about 30%, and the rig itself about 30% of the revenue.
Yeah, so just to get granular in terms of your vessels, Dato' Sri, your vessels range from accommodation workboats to platform support vessels to anchor handling tug and supply vessels, anchor handling tug vessels, and straight supply vessels. You handle the entire chain, even all the way to decommissioning. Where's most of the demand for which vessels? And I think more importantly, the charter rates for them.
Okay, the three of our higher-end AWBs are in Brunei. That's fully employed. And the rest of it, the 17 are in Malaysia to support what you call the ILCT. And that is about 14, and 3 are spot on spot to catch up any upside in the daily charter rate. Now, with regard to the charter rate, an improvement has been creeping into the market. Not as much as we would expect it to be. There's been some between 5 to 8% improvement in the charter rate. We would like it to expect better, but there is also the fact that there is still some outlage left in the market.
Yep. So what can you tell us in terms of investment into the upstream? Because obviously you supply the multinationals and the big PLCs. And then what can you tell us in terms of about returning capital investments into the area, given the fact that this whole climate change, zero carbon initiative seems to have lost a bit of momentum?
Okay, let me just go back a bit before I answer that question. When I started with the company some 2 over years ago, it was purely an OSV play. And the company has been restructured. Money has come into the company. So there's restructuring, increasing of the balance sheet, and also lowering your debt down to from 9 to 0.1. We didn't look at the business. We are too exposed on either a single market or a single business entity. Then we decided to relook at the asset. Look, where can I get the best return for what I have left? So we decided at that point in time, the contract in Brunei were up for renewal, and we were already present in 2 of our assets in Brunei. Then we brought in our asset. We managed to get all the 3 contracts in Brunei on longer term. So that gives us stability in terms of and transparency over a period of time, which means what we have done is stabilize the OSV business as far as we are concerned, in addition to the internal that we have to work. Once you have the money, you start looking at increasing your utilization, your repair and maintenance, the staff that you have. You start to do all that benchmarking. We have done all that, and that's where the turnaround took place. Then we decided what else is in the business. So we were looking at it purely on an opportunistic basis. Then the rig came along. At that point in time, when I came in, the oil price was just hovering around 40. We decided that if we can add in, instead of being exposed to purely OSV play, the rig came along, and that was a good opportunity to us. And right now, it is a very good investment for us, giving us good return, or at least it gives us a spread in terms of business and geography that we are present both in Malaysia and Brunei.
Well, that's the thing, because you do have that single client exposure in the form of Petronas. Now, I know you're actively trying to reduce that exposure or to increase your client profile and, of course, to go beyond the geography of Malaysia and Brunei. What can you tell us on that front?
I think we have done that. Right now, you have three entities in the way I look at it. You have, for the OSV side, you have Brunei. As I said earlier, that give you about 30%. Malaysia OSV give you another 40% of the revenue. And then the rig in itself give another 30%. So that in itself, beside regional spread, we also have the business spread. Now, going forward, I think where we're looking is to minimize our heavy asset investment and to look at opportunities either through M&A, buyout, or just opportunistic to something that is a bit light asset and to leverage on the skill that we have. So it'll be asset light service business. It could either be offshore or onshore or both.
Yeah. So, you know, in terms of the scar tissue, Dato Sri, from the COVID pandemic, one of the, I guess, casualties has been Sapura Energy. And there's been, there's obviously been reports that Sapura Energy is looking to hive off its 51% majority stake in Sapura Baker Hughes. Now, you know, obviously you have been named as one of the interested parties, or at least in talks with the vendors. I know you used to also work in Baker Hughes some time ago. I mean, you know, within your CV. You know, what can you tell us on that, you know, possible acquisition front?
We are looking at it. Any acquisition, not only this one that you mentioned, any acquisition that makes sense to us, in terms of investment, in terms of people that may be required, talent pool that may be required, any business that would make sense to us, not just the entity that you mentioned. Nobody thought that we would be in the rig, but the rig at that point in time makes sense to us. It's essentially, does that business make sense to us? If you tick all the box, why not?
Yeah, so Sapura Baker Hughes offers gas turbines, compressors, generators, electric motors, or other products for the oil and gas sector. You know, purely from an asset acquisition and, you know, and basically product profile perspective, does it make sense? I mean, what can you tell us on that front?
I don't think we are any different. We have the skill set. If you look at the assets that we have, except for turbine, we have compressors, we have generators. The skill sets are the same. Obviously, the business are different. And in this particular case, like in any business, like when you look at the rig that we have, we are actually buying the whole business entity. Not only the assets, it's the people and the system that goes with it. So that is one of our criteria. And if this fit our criteria, there's no reason for not only us, ourselves, or anybody else to look at it.
Well, does it help that Sapura Energy is in somewhat financial distress? Does it make the sale any easier to push through in terms of valuations?
I think that's not the decision that I would that I have any impact on it, or anybody else has impact on it. That's the company decision. And then if things are on the market, we are always prepared to look at it.
Can you also talk about this MRO acquisition that you have been, you know, in the paper suggesting that you'll close that deal by the end of the year? It's said to offer you, you know, at least a 30% bump in net income. What can you update the, you know, shareholders on that front?
Just like any other business, as you have hinted earlier, these are business that we're familiar. We're looking for, if you look at our revenue, with the rig acquisition, our revenue has gone up by 50%. We're looking at something like this, that first, it must be affordable. Can you do it? If you can do it, can you take it any further? So that's essentially the criteria that we have, and I think we can.
Well, the fact that you're adding assets and products to your portfolio suggests an element of optimism about the entire energy sector. You know, oil until a couple of years ago was quite out of favor because of this whole movement from COP26 and into carbon zero. And now, you know, obviously with the way things are, there seems to be push back into capital investment into the whole industry. What can you tell us on that front?
Okay, let us look at the supply side first. I think nobody would have thought that oil price would be as high as it is. But if you then look at the dynamic of it then, 5 years ago, especially after the low oil price, there was very little investment in the oil and gas term. And on the supply side, there was seriously an underinvestment. So you would expect, if anything picked up, that, you know, the world still need energy, the world still need to power themselves. So on the supply side, there was an underinvestment. Yes, obviously, it wasn't at that point in time the right thing to do, because if you look at it in America, people are asking, especially the big oil companies, the investor asking, hey, where's my return? Spend less on CapEx. And this is as a result of that, when things picked up, the supply side was not catered for. And if you look at it now, it become much more exacerbated because of the war in Russia. You take Russia out of the equation, that's about 10% of the daily world supply. That's a huge amount to take out once the sanctions come into place. You know, and that alone, Russia supply about 20% of oil to Europe and 40% of gas. So you know what it can do when the dynamic is disturbed. Oil price could only go higher.
We are talking this morning to Dato' Sri Hadian Hashim, the Managing Director of the oil and gas services firm Icon Offshore Berhad. We'll come back up to this, Dato' Sri, and talk about, you know, your company's financial performance, your outlook, and as well as, I guess, on a more macro picture, Malaysia's oil and gas services firms. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
We are talking this morning to Dato' Sri Hadian Hashim, the Managing Director of the oil and gas services firm Icon Offshore. And of course, Dato' Sri, given the fact that we see in the last few quarters your earnings have been recovering, 2021 we saw you record, you know, top line of about 300 million ringgit. That was quite a big increase from 2020's 212 million ringgit. And of course, as at so far this year, March, you are already 317 million ringgit. Of course, your bottom lines as well have improved. Now, the thing is, your share price continues to be beleaguered, somewhere, I think, south of 10 cents as at last count. How do you explain this disparity?
Okay, I'll probably look at this. Involvement in the company is to make sure that the company makes money. It has done that. And as far as raising the looking at the oil price, that is something that's market driven. And if you look around, there are companies that are making money and their share price has not gone up. So I'm not in a peculiar situation alone. But I think the important thing is, is value being delivered to the shareholders in terms of growth, in terms of profits, in terms of revenue? The answer is yes. Obviously, it probably takes time for the investor to reevaluate any oil and gas company given the current situation.
Yeah, I mean, it seems really bizarre, Dato' Sri, because your net income, 40 million so far, that's nearly twice what it was last year. Your margins at about 44% at an EBITDA level and operating margins of about 22% seem healthy and, of course, about on par as the previous corresponding period. But nonetheless, your PE is 5.8 times earnings right now, forward earnings 4.7 times. That's really, you know, that's really quite inexplicable. Is there some concern where Malaysia's oil and gas services firms comes into play? Because we've seen problems at Sabah, we've seen problems at Sumatek, and you know, there seems to be a discount factor where Malaysia's services firms are concerned.
I do not deny that there is that effect as a result of what you have mentioned for the companies that you have mentioned. But having said that, the idea is for us to continue making money, sooner or later, or I would prefer to be sooner, that the investing public or companies will start to realize, yes, this is the company that has been consistently making money for the last 2 years.
So how do you think this is addressed? Does it help with more coverage? Because as it stands, you've only got one analyst covering the stock. And maybe that's the reason. The reason is because your market valuation is still, you know, below the radar of some fund mandates. You know, so obviously, although you are in charge of profits and loss, the P&L, you also have a responsibility to deliver value on a share price level.
Well, I can't agree more with you on that. Coverage is one issue, but I think we are addressing that with the employment of our people that knows the business. And with now that we are in a position to talk, we will be talking a lot more with regards to the company performance.
Okay. Dr. Sok, what can you tell us about the global, the macro front where, we have supply shortages? As you said, Russia is responsible for 10% of global production. Right now, most of Europe is not buying Russian oil. Reportedly, India and China are mopping up that excess liquidity. You know, for someone like yourself, who I guess are, buyer agnostic, how are you going to play into this, into this macro theme?
You look at, that's a big macro picture that you're looking once you start to put the oil and gas producers into it. Where we are concerned and where it matters to us is that on the Malaysian front, oil and gas contribute to about 19 to 20%. That's a huge impact on our economy. The headwinds has been and will continue. I don't know how long this would be. It's the funding for any future expansion. There come a time, if you look at, just looking at ourselves, we are 10% of the market for ASB. Now, if not much money is coming in into future expansion to allow for the increase in activities, in a sense, it will be good for us because there'll be tightening of supply. But over the long period, this may not be good for the whole ecosystem. Funding needs to be available, which is at the moment not because of a number of other issues. One of that is, as we discussed earlier, the flu effects of what has been happening in the market. Secondly, the push for more toward ESG, which we can discuss if you need to. But on the whole, I think there is sustainability and future for this oil and gas. If you then bring forward the demand or the energy mix for, say, going into 2050, fossil fuel will still be around 48 to 50% of that energy mix. Obviously, the renewable will be close to about, depending on which prediction you go by, close to about 30%. So there will still be continuing. What it will be is the cost of doing business into this will probably go up, I think, and somehow that has got to be factored in. Why would it go up? Because there's a need now for the carbon capturing exercise that needs to be done. Carbon capturing is not new. I mean, the transportation industry, the power industry has been capturing carbon, mostly in North America, Australia, Europe and all that, but it's getting traction.
I'm talking this morning to Dato' Sri Hadian Hashim, the Managing Director of the oil and gas services firm Icon Offshore. Now, just in terms of the investment of the sector, and of course, what happens with Petronas is highly material to services firms like yourselves. Reports that Petronas might be called in with its dividends to help shore up finances within the government. Malaysia seems steadfast in its commitment to a 6% fiscal deficit target. Petronas might be called in to help buffer up the government finances. If that does happen as expected, Dato' Sri, do you think that might impact capital investments into the sector? And of course, then as a corollary, as a downflow to business to people like yourselves?
I think in any business with Petronas included, you just don't look at one sector of the equation. There's a certain amount that needs to be given back to the government because the government owns Petronas in terms of dividend. But there's also in devising how much dividend that needs to be given or whatever that needs to be given must take cognizance of the fact of your future CapEx spends. You can't just take out and not spend. So I think so far there has been a balancing act, and I think Petronas has been responsible and will continue to be responsible for the garden guardians of our how we develop our oil and gas resources within Malaysia and obviously overseas.
What's the tone and manner been like of your, you know, of your contract negotiations with Petronas? You know, given the fact that they are a main customer of yourselves, how do they placate you that there will continue to be investment into the sector?
I think one got to realize that, as has been mentioned, this is 20% of our GDP. So effort needs to be continued. Ways need to be looked at. The question is, how can we do things better? And I think to do things better, to provide an ecosystem or platform to do that better, involve all the stakeholders as required to be. That would mean engagement by the authorities, Petronas, and also the service provider within the ecosystem.
And even now, Dato' Sri, as we talk about your possible acquisitions of your MRO businesses or your Sapura Baker Hughes acquisitions, you know, these happened in the immediate term, but much further out, there is a real global movement to carbon, you know, carbon zero and neutrality, which obviously, you know, envisages a future where, you know, vehicles are much driven by really renewable sources rather than fossils. How are you positioning, you know, Icon Offshore to deal with that future?
On our own front, I think very early in the game, we bought two of our fleet, 10% of our fleet that are hybrid run, which is electric diesel. Subsequent to that, we have also introduced the use of the electronic fuel monitoring system. By some of these company standard, reduction up to 50% has been possible. So on our own front, we've employed the use of the latest propulsion system, i.e. diesel electric. We have also introduced, 10% of our fleet at the moment are on diesel electric. Five of our fleet are on this electronic fuel monitoring system, so there's about 20%, 25%. So we are there in as far as the use of technology and application of technology, we are there. In as far as looking at the environment, discharge, safety to people, providing a conducive environment to work, that's works in progress. From the safety front, I think we have been very good at it. Recently, we won an award for the best safety award from one of the oil companies.
But in terms of pivot, yeah, Dr. Sri, I mean, looking elsewhere within the ecosystem, we've seen, you know, companies like Yinson put some of their spare cash aside to buy renewable sources of energy generation. I think it was in India that they bought an asset. Would that be something that would be within your appetite and as well as your shareholders' appetite to do so?
I think at the end of the day, once we have done this, what else could be done? We are also looking at the possibility into that, but the question is when.
What can you tell us on that when front?
At the moment, what we need to do is set up a framework for the ESG, and I think on that front, we have appointed a consultant to define where we should be. And if you look at the UN front with regard to OSG, we have adopted six of these. One of it is the good health and well-being, quality education, affordable and clean energy, sustainable cities and consumers, decent work and economic growth, and life below water. So we have done a fair bit of this. It is an ongoing thing, and obviously, would renewable be considered in the future? The answer is yes. It's a question of we need to be prepared for it, and when the time comes, I would like to see it sooner than later, but wouldn't be able to give you the time frame, but it's under consideration.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, Dato' Sri. We were talking to Dato' Sri Hadian Hashim, the Managing Director of the Oil and Gas Services firm Icon Offshore, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, where unlimited potential begins.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.